Welcome to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines, changing the conversation around divorce. This show is sponsored by Penguin in the Room. Penguin in the Room is an award-winning arts marketing and social media management company. If you want to jazz up your socials and have someone Instagram and tweet for you, then here's your answer. Go to www.penguinintheroom.com. As always, hit subscribe to make sure you're updated about new episodes. And we love to hear from you on social media at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. You can also email us. All the info's on our website, thedivorcesocial.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I am joined by actor, comedian and Instagram star Johanna James. Welcome to the Divorce Club.
Love this. I love when I saw you were doing this online, I was like, oh, fantastic idea. Nobody knows I'm divorced and I don't know that many other divorced people. So, oh, I wanted to join.
This is one of the weirdest bits about finding guests for the podcast, though, is it's quite hard to find out if people have been divorced or not unless you know them, because it's not like there's no like database online of just all the divorced people. So it has been crazy since we released the first series, and then people come out of the woodwork and like, I'm divorced and I never knew you were divorced.
Yeah, I've had that once where I was another sort of comedian friend of mine, we were on a project and I let them know that I was divorced, and he took me to one side and was like, me too, but I never speak about it. And I was like, oh my God, dude, me too. So yeah, it's like a little secret we can whip out at parties.
And now publicly on a podcast.
I don't really speak about it. I've never fully spoken about it before. So this is kind of you're taking my V plates off, talking about my divorce.
Oh, no one's ever said that before. I'm quite excited.
Taking my D-plates.
And I can't even drive, so. Well, welcome to the Divorce Club. You're so welcome. And I'm glad that you have a space to talk about divorce. I hope it's a nice first taking your D-plates experience. Mm-hmm. But how does that feel? Because obviously you don't talk about it a lot. When I say to you, you are divorced.
If I'm honest, I got divorced so long ago that I forget that I am. It's often like my friends will bring it up more than me. They'll be like, wait, weren't you? You were married. Do what your wedding? And I'm like, God, I was. Yeah. And it's a bit mad how a whole massive portion of your life can happen. And then you can kind of fold it in a little box and close it and carry on.
Because you were quite young when you got divorced.
I was very young. I was young when I got married. I was 18 when I got married.
Very young.
And 23 when I got divorced. And I'm 30 now. So yeah.
So I guess that's 7 years ago for you. So it must seem like a bit of a different life.
Oh yeah, completely, completely. And when you think about yourself when you're 30 to when you're 18, it's 12 years ago. And at 18, I thought I was so mature. And I thought you really think you know yourself. And I was kind of a mature 18-year-old, but even so, that's a very heavy decision to be making at 18.
And so do you think it was your age that came into it with the reason that the marriage didn't work, or was it a factor of things?
No, absolutely not. And this is the thing. So even though I was very young, the actual age had nothing to do with the breakdown of the divorce, I don't think, because there was infidelity, there was cheating. I thought very maturely. My reaction was, okay, let's get counseling. Let's do this. I was really proactive for like keeping the marriage together. I was kind of taught that once you're married, like that's it. You just battle on no matter what. Which in reflection now, I'm like, that's maybe not the best advice, because not in all circumstances is it best to battle on. If you're in a really toxic relationship or something that's quite harmful, you don't have to battle on with it. And yeah, I wasn't told that.
If it's just making you unhappy,
yeah,
for years, like both of you, there's no point.
Yeah.
I think it's really strange because I was brought up Catholic, and I think I came from that idea of like, when you're married, that's it. Like, you just have to make it work. And if you break up, you're giving up. And I felt a lot of guilt for giving up, but actually we tried so hard and we were just miserable.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, like, it's weird. So my experience, so I was 20, well, I was 18 when I got married, and I came from a Christian background, like a liberal Christian. But all my friends, like, I was not the first 18-year-old to get married in my group of friends. I think I was number 3 out of my friendship group. And then every year there was more. And it was kind of the culture of what you did. You'd find a boyfriend and you think, well, we get on well, let's get married. Like, and
sure, standard.
Great. I mean, we get on really well. It's been 5 months. But then also you really wanted to sleep together, because there was not the culture where you could sleep with your boyfriends.
There was no sex before marriage.
One of the really big reasons why I think we got married so young was because we were abstaining from each other. And that definitely played into the factor of like, well, we've been together for 2 years and we really want to have sex. So if we get married, then everyone will just leave us alone. And then that was part of the whole problem, because then when we got married, we discovered that he was a sex addict. And people go, oh, a sex addict, great. That means you must have had loads of sex. I'm like, no, actually, it means we had no sex whatsoever. Because one of the problems of sex addiction is that it destroys intimacy. So you can't have sex with people that you truly are in love with or have feelings for. It kind of damages. It really damages all the, I mean, I don't know the science of it, but I know enough about it that it's not as simple as a sex addict means that you want more sex. That's just someone with a high libido.
Wow. So what a first sexual experience for you to be, you know, you're a virgin, you get married because that's the way you've been brought up. Then you want to have sex with this boyfriend that you love, and you discover that he's a sex addict and he doesn't want to have sex with you because there's too much emotion.
Yeah. So, well, technically I wasn't a total virgin. I had one previous boyfriend to him when I was about 16. And I had maybe a couple of times on my hand. I could count the amount of times that we'd fumbled around. But I was like pretty much, I didn't really have any sexual history. And yeah. And again, cause I had this whole religious thing, I never really enjoyed it. It was always like a quick, like, oh, I feel really bad now. It was a big psychological thing. And then I got married and thought, oh, well, great. This is the space in which I can actually have sex. And then I got there, and then me and my husband, we rarely ever had sex. I mean, ever. It was, and I couldn't work out what was wrong. And I remember I started university the same year that I got married. So I actually missed my uni induction because I was on my honeymoon and then like rolled into uni, like, sorry.
With a tan, like, hey, I'm married.
Like, hey, yeah. I'm married. And it completely changed my uni experience being married, because I was so desperate to try and like fix and solve this like failing relationship that I really didn't spend much time in uni. I'd get in for my class and I'd get out, and I didn't have the social life that would come with it.
Yeah, because I lost my virginity at uni. I was a late bloomer.
Oh, wow.
I'd done lots of the fumbling. I was all about the fumbling and the oral sex, yes. And then I hadn't had sex with anyone, and I had sex with someone in Freshers Week uni. So, yeah, dreamy. And he lived on my hall, and then I had to live on the same hall as him for a year.
Oh,
and I was basically just like, I want to have sex, but I don't want it to build it up and be some like really special thing with someone I'm in love with. I just want to have sex and get it out of the way. So, and he was just a lovely guy. So we had sex and then I was trapped in a hall with him for a year. And he was like, should we do it again? And I was like, no, thank you. So you missed out on all of that.
Yeah, so we actually were both in uni at the same time. Even though he was about 5 years older than me, he went to uni late, but we were both at different unis in London. So that was stressful on top of trying to start a marriage. And I remember going to the girls at uni and being like, how do you get someone to have sex with you? And they're like, what? I'm like literally, how? How do you do it? Because I'm throwing everything at the wall here and I can't seduce my husband. And everyone was like, well, you just like lie there. Like, I'm like, no, he won't. He won't have sex with me. What do I do? And I spent about 10 months trying to like crack this egg. I remember I went to Ann Summers and I bought like ridiculous, I was crotchless this and all these kind of tassel-y things. And I bought it all. And I remember I put it on and I like strode into the living room like, yo, and nothing. He was like, don't like that. And I returned it to Ann Summers and the lady at Ann Summers went, oh, why are you returning it? I was like, oh, my husband didn't like it. And he was like, is he mad? Are you, what? And then I actually asked him, I was like, are you gay? Because why don't you want to have sex with me? And he at the time just said it because he just had a low libido and he was busy or stressed. But what I didn't realize was he was channeling his sexual force elsewhere, not at me.
So from the beginning of the marriage, was he sleeping with other people?
Yeah, so what happened was like 10 months into the marriage, I finally like worked out why he wasn't sleeping with me. And
so how did I
find out?
Yeah. Like what was that process? Because this sounds such a stressful start to a marriage. Oh my God.
I was 19. So I watched a movie called He's Just Not That Into You.
Yeah, great movie.
Yeah. And I remember I watched it and I started crying. Like I was like, why am I crying? I don't even like it's not that great. But like I realized it was the scene where the wife was dressing up for the husband and the husband had another woman under the desk. And it was like, if he's not having sex with you, he's like, he's not that into you. And it's what pushed me to go, I'm going to do what I really don't agree with, but I'm going to check his computer because I don't agree with like checking up on partners' phones and stuff. But I decided, I was like, I'm going to follow my gut. I think something's telling me that I need to check this. So I did. And the minute that I went on his Facebook, I had women pop up being like, hey, babe. And I found all, he deleted a lot of the inbox, but he'd forgot to delete his scent. And I could see him actively like messaging all these women, trying to get them to respond to him. And it was mad. Only one woman actually went, aren't you married? Like, no, thanks. Like, you should think about your wife. You need a bit of help. And I was like, thank you for the one woman.
Yeah, good on that woman. So what was that moment? So where are you? You're on his Facebook. Are you
at home? He's out at uni and I just texted him like, get home now, and he knew. And it all came out. And I said to him as well, I said, look, I've gone through your entire laptop. I know everything. So I need you to tell me everything. And if you leave out one thing, like that's it. So I pretended I knew like way more. And so then he started telling me everything, which was nothing that I knew about. And so there's that me having to go, I knew about that. So it all kind of came out. And then I did the thing, which is where if I was older and now, I would have been like, no, I will not let someone disrespect me like that. I would have had so much more self-respect and of myself, but I didn't have that because I was so young and naive. And also my self-esteem was so crushed. So I reacted not how I would now. And I decided to, I forgave him like that. Like within probably about 2 days, I was like, fine, I can handle this. We're going to have therapy and we're going to work it out. Also, everyone who told me that I was too young to get married and I wouldn't be able to handle it, I wanted to prove to them that they were wrong. And so I was like, no, I can handle this, because it would be so embarrassing because everybody told me that I shouldn't get married. People in the wedding dress shop were like, it was a bit of a Julia Roberts moment. They're like, can I help you? And you're like, oh, hi, I'm getting married. They're like, like the sale racks over there. And it's like, no, I'd like to buy like a proper dress and properly getting married. And people being like, I haven't had that experience of people being, you know, when you say, oh, I'm getting married, and they're like, oh, congratulations. My experience was, oh, I'm getting married. What? You? How old are you? Too young. Not gonna last. I'm like, wow, people say that to your face.
Wow, that's so crazy. So you had like prejudice before you even went into the marriage?
Yeah, random people. I used to work in a shop, and if I was, you know, chatting about getting married or anything to strangers, strangers would be telling me that I was too young and stuff, which in a sense, I feel like if I hadn't gone through what I'd gone through with him, I probably still would be married. Like, because I'm that person. I'm really like, when you find a partner, I'm all in, ride and die kind of partner. And loads of my friends who got married at 18, 19 are still married. They're all having their like 10 year anniversary. So it's not to say that when you get married at 18, 19, 20, that it won't work out. But because I'd had so much shit thrown at me, when it kind of broke in the first year, I decided to stay for all the wrong reasons, because I was like, I need to prove that I can handle this. When actually, there's nothing to prove.
Yeah, and it's so interesting though, when you're, because I remember in my marriage when we were having problems, you know, you tell your friends about the problems and they'd say, you know, oh no, that doesn't sound good. Like, you need to, I think you need to think about breaking up, or you need to do this and do that. And then you sort of feel like you have to defend that person and defend your decision to have married them. And you're like, no, actually, obviously, like, I'm only telling you like the bad bits, and obviously like they're great as well. And it's that, who are you trying to convince? Because if you're unhappy, and also your friends are there, hopefully, to look after and support you. But we all do it. We're all like, yeah, no, it's fine. Like, you feel like you need to prove something. Yeah.
If you ever have it where you second think about telling something to a friend, then it's kind of like, then I've admitted outside of my brain that there's something really wrong. And if I like tell this friend, because I remember like sort of thinking, oh, maybe I shouldn't complain so much to my friends, because they're just gonna wonder why I'm in this like horrible relationship. But that speaks volumes. Like, you should be wondering why.
Yeah. But
yeah, I think if you're having to like censor what you're telling your friends about the truth of your relationship, or if you're worried that they're gonna go, babe, I don't think you should be with that person, then that's like a massive flag. You should definitely listen to that.
And so you were on Facebook, you confronted him, he came home, then within 2 days you'd forgiven him. And was there like a plan of action? Were you like, these are the things that we're going to do to make things work?
Oh, yeah. So for me, oh, like just the whole experience of cheating on someone, it shatters the trust, which is kind of the core of the relationship. So every time he went out, went to uni, every time his phone went off, laptop went off, your heart goes, and you just get, you can't, as much as you want to try and like trust somebody, it just, it's gone. And to build that up again, I had to say, right, like, I need you to be accountable to me, and be accountable with your sex addiction as well. I need you to go to therapy, which he agreed to do, went once and then didn't go again. So that kind of fell apart, because unless you yourself want to go to therapy, it isn't going to work. Like, it's just, it can't come from someone else. Again, flag, flag, flag. There were just flags everywhere. I was just swimming through flags at the time, but yeah. And so we had like rules about just, I think I like wanted to check his phone and his computer, like all passwords were that, but I can't really think of how we just kind of like battled on. Oh God, we were married. So from that, I found out in month 10, and we stayed married for 3 years.
Wow.
That was hell. And still didn't get a sex life. That still didn't, because nothing got healed. So nothing could be healed. So I was in this incredibly lonely, we were like housemates, and we became kind of, the dynamic between us became more like mother son. I was just like a housemate that like cooked a lot.
And were you still checking his devices and things like that by the third year?
I was still always like, I couldn't get to a place where I trusted fully, I guess. Although, no, I think I did by the sort of second or third year, I think I did. But what had happened was I'd stopped caring. Like, I wasn't in love with him. And yeah, like when you're in love with someone, they have more power to hurt you. So I think my way of dealing it, my body was like, well, if you just don't love him, then he can't hurt you. So done. Yeah. And then I finished my degree, and then I decided to go to drama school. and I do a 1 year like post-grad. So I went to drama school, and drama school changed my life because they really rip you in drama school. They just like rip all of your, you know, how you walk, how you are. They kind of like, they call it stripping back in the first year. So they strip back who you are. And then you have to do loads of like method acting and all these games. You have to like memory recall, like really painful shit. And so drama school was like extra emotional for me because I had to actually start addressing all of this kind of trauma. Oh, and on top of this as well, just in a social thing, when I did decide to leave and I left, I lost maybe 80% of my friends from that initial group because everyone was in the church and nobody knew how to handle it. Like they couldn't, I was like the first divorcee of the group. And yeah, I lost like a bunch of friends. My family reacted so badly as well. Like my parents were livid. Yeah, I was kind of exiled a little bit.
So, wow. So you're at drama school being ripped apart. I remember that. I remember being told that one of my shoulders was higher up than the other because I carried a bag on the same side. So I needed to start changing the side my bag was carried on. And literally never in my TV, film and theatre life since has anyone said to me anything about the level of my shoulders. But at drama school, that was a big deal.
I got you have to walk and then everyone has to imitate your walk and then you get really subconscious. I'm like, oh my God, why do I walk like a kind of crane, like what's going on?
Like no director has ever been like in The Crown, Julian Gerald wasn't like, Sam, one of your shoulders is higher than the other and it's really distracting from the scene, like imagine. But it is useful at the time. So you're being ripped apart and like built back up, and it is an incredibly intense experience, drama school on its own. So at the same time you're breaking up with your husband and losing all of your friends. So how did, first of all, how was that moment that you decided, right, that's enough, I'm going to leave? And how did you break it to your parents?
So in fairness to the story, I'm going to tell the story like completely fairly. So this was like year three. I got to drama school and they strip you down and they make you address stuff. But also it built up my confidence. I was performing. You have to have a certain level of like, to get out and perform and be that brave and stuff. And so I started to feel more myself than I had for like years and years and years. So then I got to drama school. And then over the course of the year in the drama school, I felt myself. No, I didn't even feel myself. I just completely surprised myself that I started to have feelings for somebody in my year. And it kind of completely broke my heart because I was like, oh my God, I think I have feelings for someone. Like, how can this happen? Like, I'm not going to cheat because I hate cheating because look what's happened to me. But on the other side of it, I'm completely miserable. And I have somebody who's not emotionally or sexually or anything fulfilling my needs. And I'm like, I need to make some serious decisions here. And I remember I had this guy who he confessed to me that he was in love with me and he would be there and, you know, he wanted this life thing with me. And I was like, oh my God, I have like the decision to make here. Like, what do I do? So then I was like, right, I know I'm going to, in fairness to my husband, I'm going to set up a date night and be like, yeah, we haven't had any date night in like months. Let's have a date night. And in my head, I was like, if on this date, I feel that there is anything to save here, then I'm going to stay. And I remember saying, okay, Saturday, we're going to have a date night. And then he turned around and was like, oh, babe, Saturday night, it's Champions League. And I was like, yeah, but it's really important to me that we have this date night because we haven't like, I was like, can't you record it or watch it in any other way? Because I really want to have this date night. And then I was like, well, you decide, would you like to want a date with me or would you like to watch Champions League? And he went, oh, I really want to watch Champions League. And so he had no idea that the question I was asking him was actually an ultimatum for our marriage. Like, do you want to be in this marriage with me? And he's like, nah, Champions League.
Isn't it funny the things we do and we don't tell them? I was ill. I remember being ill and things weren't going well in my marriage. And I remember thinking, if he brings me home flowers, then he loves me. And if he doesn't, it's a clear sign that he doesn't love me. And I'd make like these little like tests in my, like just random, completely irrational tests. Yeah. And he didn't bring home flowers.
Well then, you know, some of them do, some men do. And I get very jealous. I'd see other people in relationships and I'd be like, how do they have this dynamic? That's what I was sold. Because when I was sold this marriage, I was sold the whole Disney thing. It just didn't arrive. Like, because we had all this sexual tension before we, because we didn't have sex before we got married. And then for it to completely dissipate, there's a meme online of this raccoon that finds candy floss, and the raccoon drops it in a puddle of water and it completely disappears. And this raccoon's just like, what the fuck? And that, I just felt like that was my marriage. That was like this big thing of candy floss. I was like, yay, Disney wedding. And then it being going like,
and then it disappeared in a puddle.
Like, oh, this is horrible. So then to end the story, I decided that there was nothing in the marriage, and I left him for this other guy. And which isn't the right thing to do at all. But I don't think I had enough strength in myself as a person. I was so a hollow shell. I didn't think I had enough strength. Now I would be able to leave a relationship for myself and by myself. But back then at 22, it was my 23rd birthday that I left. And
wow, don't do things by halves. Happy birthday, me.
Yeah. And I left, and that was really hard because, again, everyone around me was so horrible about it. And again, I got cast as the horrible woman who left someone for another man. And
yeah,
I got all kind of shade thrown at me. I was even at a friend's wedding, and I was dancing with her boyfriend. She said, she was like, oh, dance with my boyfriend. You know, we're all good mates. It's fine. So I was dancing with her boyfriend. And then another girl came over to her and said, be careful of that one. She'll take your boyfriend. And she went, what are you talking about? She's my best friend. Like, shut up. But she told me, she was like, just so you know, that girl like does not have your back. And that was the reputation that I had around me as some sort of like home wrecker. I was like, no, I left my marriage. I didn't steal anyone else's.
I think that's so strange and common. Like, so many people have said that they've had that, like, as soon as you get divorced or separated, people suddenly assume that you want their yeah. husbands. It's like, no, actually I was just very happy on my own. I was like, I don't want anyone right now. I just want me.
Weird, like, there's a weird kind of like divorcee adulterous sort of slut thing where they kind of get all put together in a bit of a sandwich, and that was really weird. And so I went through a few years of socially, you know, being gossiped about or looked down on or not being invited to stuff, and I lost a lot. There are friends to this day who have not texted me since they found out.
Wow. And did they know what he'd done, or did they only know what you'd done?
This is the thing. Everyone just found out about me leaving for another guy. Nobody knew the context, because on the outside, we look like the perfect couple. Like, to the outside world, it looked great. We looked really great. And we were like, we used to help out with like the youth and the church and stuff. So we did a great job of doing this kind of like veneer. But inside, the marriage was very different. And that made me always go, never judge a couple by what they are on social media, by what they are when they're out and about at a party, because you just never know. When they get in the car, when they get back home, it could be completely different.
I think this idea that obviously what you don't go into a marriage thinking it's going to end in a minute, because otherwise you wouldn't get married. But this idea that once you're married, you can't get out, you have to stay in no matter what, is so unhealthy. And it's led to so many people being unhappy for years and years. And so you left and for this other guy. So how long were you with the other guy? How did that work out?
So, I left, but not immediately. I didn't see the other guy for a whole sort of summer. I was like, look, I need to have some time alone. And also out of respect for everything. I didn't jump straight into a relationship with them, but after a few months we did start seeing each other, but privately, because everyone else was hating on me. And then we were together for 4 years. So about the same time I was married, I was with the other guy, and then that kind of broke down and he left. But like, I'm grateful to him in the sense that like he kind of came in. And
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Showed me, oh, this is how it's supposed to feel when you're in love with someone and when you're, this is how, also like that, he also introduced me to sex properly because before that, like nearly nothing.
I'm so pleased for you and your vagina.
Very happy now. But so in a way, I'm like, oh, it was worth it, even though I didn't stay with that guy, but it's not about that. Now I don't really like value if someone's married, or oh, they've been married for 50 years, I'm like, great, are they happy? I celebrate like healthy relationships, good relationships. And it was all my journey on toxic. I tend to go for very toxic, sad guys. I've realized that's my thing. Sure.
We all have a type.
Yeah, that's my type, because I'm all up here and all excitable and energy and stuff. So I tend to go for quite depressive men. And then one thing I did do is when I left that marriage, I went into therapy and I found myself a therapist who was amazing. And I had 9 months of unpacking all of that. And I've got to say, like, hats off to her. I wouldn't have the confidence to do what I do now if I hadn't gone through that.
I think therapy is so important. So many people I've interviewed on the podcast have had counseling and therapy after their divorce.
I need it. And also as well, just a little happiness to the story. So we ended on not good terms, but I remember when I told him that I was leaving and I said, I was completely honest. I said, look, I've fallen in love with someone else. And I remember sitting there before I did and I looked at my life and I was like, I know for sure what my life will be like for the next 50 years if I stay where I am. I know what I'm going to get and I know how it's going to be. I've been here for 4 years. Or I could completely jump ship and I don't know what's there. But I thought about looking at my life and going, I never want to look back and hit those major milestones in life with houses and babies and go, oh, but what if? Just couldn't do that. So I jumped ship and I told him everything and I was really honest, which was so hard to do. But I did say I was in love with someone else. And his reaction was, of course you are. Like he knew, there was part of him that knew that we were so dysfunctional. Like, of course, at some point you can't go there's only so many years you can go without somebody like physically showing you, holding you. Oh, also, I do this thing, which is actually a thing. I just thought I was really weird. But I wake up in the middle of the night or just before the morning when I'm half asleep, half awake. And I'm like tickling my arms.
Shut up. I do that too.
It's a thing. So, and I wake up and I'm like, this is weird. And I've got my arms outstretched. I'm tickling myself. And she said, it's self-soothing. When you're in that weird space between being asleep and awake, your body can kind of trick itself that your touch is from someone else.
Oh my God.
It's called self-soothing. And it's basically your subconscious needing more touch, needing more human interaction. So I was like, oh, that's so sad, but weird. But I'm glad that I'm not the only one that does it.
That is so sad. And I definitely did that during my marriage.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I think that's where it came from. I was constantly doing this.
Yeah, because you wake up with your arms in the air and you're like stroking your arm. And like my ex would be lying next to me and I'd be like, okay, what I'm doing.
You're trying to like make it into a stretch, like, oh, I'm just stretching. Oh, that's good. Yeah, I've got an itch. But yeah, I do find it weird if anyone who does wake up next to me and I'm just out there just doing some weird zombie thing. But
do you think it's also being a performer, we're quite, well, we tend to be quite touchy-feely people maybe some office workers. So I definitely need like hugs and things like that, like on a regular basis.
Yeah, coronavirus is killing me. I can't hug anyone or touch anyone. And I'm like, well, I live with my boyfriend now, but I'm a touchy feely person, especially in relationships. I need a lot. I'm like a sponge. I could be hugged all day. I could be tickled and hugged and patted all day.
Or you just tickle yourself. I do. So you were with this other guy for 4 years, and were you getting divorced during that time? And how did you do it? Did you hire a solicitor? Did you do it yourself?
Yeah, so we did it ourselves. We had no assets, no kids, no nothing. So there wasn't really anything to argue over. Plus, we weren't in a bad place with each other. Like we could talk. And so he filed for divorce, and he filed the reason being me and me going off with someone else.
And how did you feel about him filing divorce for you leaving him when he'd obviously cheated throughout the marriage?
I was like, can't we just both, you know, because we've both, at either ends, we've both cheated, like we've really messed this up and like and stuff. And so I was a bit annoyed that it's gone down in history, because I did think, oh, if anyone's looking up my name in like, you know, those like ancestry things, they're gonna be like, oh, here it is, Johanna, oh, she got married at 18, oh, and she got divorced, oh, it was her fault, she went off with another man. And I was like, that doesn't tell history, that doesn't tell the story, there was so much more to it than that.
Well, I don't think it goes on public record, you'll be pleased to know. No.
Okay.
So the only person, well, I was told by my solicitor, the only person who sees the reason is like the judge and the solicitor.
Oh, okay.
And otherwise it just says you're divorced.
And what was nice was to round the story up is that years later he got in contact with me. So we're not in contact anymore. We left it there. But he got in contact with me and said, could I meet you for a coffee? And part of me was like, oh, does he want to get back together? Like, this is awful. Like, what's going on? And I've had recurrent nightmares that the divorce has come back like not valid. And it's like, oh, no, sorry. Actually, legally, you're still married. And I'm like, but we met for coffee years later, and he looked very different. Anyway, we had a coffee, and he came to say that he joined Sex Addict Anonymous, and he was on a 12-step program, and he was on step number 11, which was to personally and properly apologize to anyone that your addiction had impacted. And he said that it really hadn't registered how much his sex addiction and rejecting me had impacted me, until he was in one of the meetings and he told the story of me dressing up for him and him rejecting me, and it was the other guys going, oh, you must have crushed that girl, like, wow. And he kind of saw it from another perspective. So he broke down in this coffee shop and apologized to me, and I broke down and apologized to him, and that was an amazing closure. So I'm happy to talk about this stuff now, because I was lucky enough to get a bit of closure with him, and we shook on it, and we both agreed, like, nobody meant to hurt anybody else. We were just two very hurt people smashing our way through. And yeah, so that was kind of where that ended. And that was kind of good.
That's really nice to have that moment where you can both communicate with a bit of distance from the whole thing. And, but I mean, how, because I think most people have experienced some form of like rejection, you know, like even in a long-term relationship when I know I have, like when you're with your partner and you're like feeling a bit sexy and you're like trying to start the mood and they're like, no, I'm tired. And especially when you've been with someone for a long time, they don't like let you down gently. They're just like no. And roll over. But if you are in a place where you have low self-esteem at that time or for whatever reason, or like I have anxiety, like it can really affect you in quite a big way, that sort of rejection from someone so close to you. And obviously you had it for the whole of your marriage. Do you think that's affected your intimacy with future and current partners?
Oh yeah, like I massively overreact if I get rejected now. So if that, you know, situation happens, I'm like, what about? And they're like, nah, tired, bloated. And I'm like, like I know I can feel when I'm overreacting to that scenario. And it's put me off like hitting on people just for that huge fear of like, oh, I'm gonna get rejected. And yeah, but not so much anymore now. But I've seen, like, before it was so bad. Even like the way that dressing in a certain way, like I remember my friend, we were in a shop and she was like, you have to try on this like tight leather dress. You have to try it on, it would look amazing on you. And I put it on and my palms started to sweat. I started to feel so uncomfortable because I had some sort of block that was going on between feeling sexy and looking sexy and being, I was almost scared to look sexy because I was scared to get rejected. So I was like, it's easier if I just wear a massive baggy jumper and be really silly. If I'm silly, then I can't fail at being sexy. It was like a weird thing. And so I've learned now years later, like I can actually wear tight clothes and be like, yes, I'm going to be sexy for me. And like that, I, the difference now between me and like 24 year old me, It's huge. And my friends have noticed as well because they're like, you're wearing something tight. And I'm like, I know.
Oh, I love that like realization. Because I remember like, because a lot of the time at the end of your marriage, for whatever reason, you're not having sex anymore because things aren't working. You know, obviously not for everyone, but if things aren't working, you're not communicating, you just don't want to, you're not in love, like whatever reason. And I remember then becoming single and people wanted to have sex with me. Like lots of people, because you know, people in bars sometimes go there to find someone to have sex with. And I was like, oh my God, there's a variety of people who would have sex with me right now. And it was such a like lovely self-affirming, like obviously you should find confidence in yourself, not in other people wanting to have sex with you. But at that moment, I was like, this is incredible. And it just like opened my eyes and made me find my sexy again, which I think is so important in a breakup.
I don't know. It's weird now because in our society, there's like, on the one side, you've got like the pro, like own your sexuality, be empowered. And then you still have this like opposing, like, oh no, you've got to be prim and proper and don't be slutty. And then on the other side being like, release your inner slut. And you're like, ooh, half nun, half slut over here, like having a little bit of a fight. I'm a slutty nun.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. I'm a big fan of the Guilty Feminist podcast and Deborah Frances White says I'm a feminist, but, and I think that sex feminism relationship is so interesting because I'm like, I like sex. And definitely since I, have separated from my ex and I'm getting divorced, I've been much more, and also I hosted Magic Mike Live, I've been much more open about I like sex and that's okay and I can have sex with people, consenting people, and we have a nice time. And I think before I would have like shied away from saying that. And I used to talk when I first started stand up, I used to talk about sex on stage, and lots of male comedy promoters said to me, oh, you're shocking, aren't you? That's your thing. Yeah. You shock people. And to me, I wasn't saying anything shocking. I was just talking about like something most people do. And now I'm, you know, I am very much of the sex is great, everyone should be orgasming. And it can get a bit of backlash. Like I did say I like a wanking video, which is true. I'm sorry, it's true. I prefer it to a photo, it's too static. Yeah. I'm all about, you know, I'm a film and TV actor. I like a video.
Want a moving image.
So, yeah, a 3D option. So I said I like a wanking video on a podcast. And then obviously I just got loads of messages saying, shall I send you a wanking video, or you're a slut on social media. But I think it's really, it's a difficult thing. But I just think, you know, we do shy away from talking about the sex stuff and the divorce stuff. Yeah. That's why I decided this podcast. But also I think sex is a big part of getting divorced and becoming single and having sex with people that you haven't had sex with before. And so do you, if... obviously, you were the first person of your peer group to get divorced and you said and things like that. Yeah. And if one of your friends was getting divorced now and asked you for like your top bit of advice, what would you say?
Ooh. I think, well, I would just say step back from it. The fighting over these little things, look at the bigger picture. Like, is it worth it? Who is it affecting around you? We were really lucky because we had nobody immediately, like we didn't have kids and things like that. So obviously there were parents and things that were upset, but not in the same way a kid would be. So just really for anyone who is going through a divorce, just slightly take a step back. Like, is it worth the effort? And throwing stones at this point, it just isn't worth it. So if you can try and walk out of a divorce with like, bit of head held high, bit of I know it's hard because some people are like seriously in pain, but you're going to look back at this time, look at it completely differently.
I like that. And I just final couple of questions of things I'm going through right now, and I wanted to get your take. So I have a king size bed, and obviously my partner was sleeping in it with me for 8 years, and now I'm on my own in it. So I use the other side of the bed as storage, and I have like my laptop and some books, and I have knitting on there at the moment. What do you, when you were single, what did you use the other side of your bed for?
Guests.
But like, do you have like, did you have like the other pillow there, like ready for a guest? Because
I always had I'm a cushion person, so I've always got about 60 bazillion cushions on my bed. And yeah, like I guess if it's up against a wall, it tends to be all cushions, because then I'll turn it into more of like a sofa seat laptop. Yeah, I guess I just have phone and laptop and probably some snacks. And but more often than not, I found that I really had a problem sleeping alone. That was something, again, that I had to really like work out how to sleep alone. So I always was trying to like stay with friends or have people over, or always trying to date someone. I did go through a period where I was like, I have to date someone because I've never been on my own since I was 14. So so I haven't really had a bed that is like fully, I've been able to fully make into a little wonderland that's your one.
Yeah, well, I would recommend it if you ever get the, if your boyfriend goes away on a holiday.
I'd be scared of the knitting needle though, because I'm a regular. So who knows where that's going to go.
Well, mine are wooden, so I don't think they'd be able to stab you. It'd be fine. And I'm also currently decorating my house. So I used to live here with my ex, but now I'm making it my own. And I've like painted the kitchen pink, and I've like bought things that I love, but I know that he'd hate. Is there, do you remember like a time of like buying something that you were like, my ex would hate this, but I love it, or like decorating a space just
yes,
for you?
Yes, I do. I remember, or just buying things. So obviously when you're married, we did the thing straight away where we had a shared account, because we were like, we're going to share everything. So we had a shared account, but then we kind of started to butt head against finances. We were very poor. We were both students. And he was of a extreme savers mentality, where I realized that how I deal with like anxiety and stress is I like to shop. I don't go mad with it, but it's little things that just help me process. So for things like, I don't like takeaways because I find that a bit of a waste of money, just because I didn't value that amount of money. £17 on a pizza, I'm like, that's a MAC lipstick. So we always kind of butted head on that. So I remember like being able to shop for the first time and not have anybody like check my credit card, or like not being able to access, it was my account, and nobody was going to tell me off because I wasn't accountable to anyone else. So just being able to like buy things and yeah, choose my own, like actually choose my own whatever I want. It's so empowering. Like, especially if you don't do that before you marry someone. So like I went straight from my mum's house to my marriage house.
Marital home.
Marital home. There we are. Otherwise known as a marriage house. And yeah, I just went straight from my mum to that. And I guess I didn't have that time where I was like, you know, who am I? What do I like? It was just like what my parents liked and then what me and someone else liked. So now I'm really grateful I've had time to go like, I really like this.
Yeah. I'm getting really into like flocked candelabras, which is when they look a bit velvety. That's my current obsession. Also, did you, I really at the moment I'm celebrating like small achievements. Like I mowed the lawn for the first time in the last couple of months in my whole life.
Yeah.
Because I'd never mown the lawn and my ex used to do it. Do you remember a moment where you did something that you would have got your ex-husband to do, but then you did it for yourself?
Oh, yeah. So he came from a family of builders, which meant that like everything had to be done properly. And obviously everything was built really well. And then I had to like learn how to put shelves up and stuff. And I'm one of those people that like, I don't read the IKEA instructions. I'm just like, we'll work it out. It'll be fine. It'll miss a few pins, but it'll be fine. And yeah, having to like work out how to put shelves up and like learn all that now, it's amazing because now I'm coming into relationships being all like, well, I'll bring my toolkit and I'm pretty savvy with putting things up. And yeah, it's always wonky, but I'm kind of proud of that because I'm not being, I haven't got a proper builder over my shoulder being like, well, you didn't use a leveler, did you? I'm like, no.
Yeah. But you're like, but I did that myself. I have my own pink screwdriver. Well done.
Yeah. Like I'm so proud of the fact that I own a full toolkit and an electric drill. And my boyfriend doesn't own a screw.
Oh, well, I need some shelves putting up. So if you could come around and do them, that'd be great.
I will. I mean, they will be not level, but they'll be up.
That's fine. I'll just put things on them that are wonky anyway.
Exactly. It's all objective and subjective.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much. It's been
brilliant. Thank you for having me. It's just lovely to chat, especially this time. We don't see many faces.
We need to have conversations. Where can people find out more about you?
Oh, online? I'm everywhere on the internet at Johanna James, just my name, J.A. Hannah James.
Dreaming. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And welcome to the Divorce Club.
I'm in.
Oh, hi. Thank you for listening to the Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines. Please leave us a review. Please, please. It would be super nice. They're lovely to read. They keep me cheery and happy and keep me going. But also it affects our listing in the podcast charts, which are very important because that's how more people find the podcast. And I'd love to help more people get through those really tough heartbreak and divorce times. And they're more likely to find us if we're higher up on the charts. So if you'd like to leave a review, I'd love you forever. You can leave them on iTunes is the big one, or most podcast platforms do them as well. I'll take all the reviews you've got to give. You can also get in contact on Twitter and Instagram at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. We have a website, thedivorcesocial.com, and we have a Patreon account, which means that you can support the podcast for as little as £2 a month. And it helps me with all the admin costs. It also means you have access to our 90s style divorce and heartbreak chat room. And there's lots of exclusives on there, little bits of audio that you don't get in the main podcast, and some giveaways as well. So I'd love to see you over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Samantha Baines. And please leave a review. Did I say that already? Please leave a review. Love you forever.